is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But at times, you just take the comfort that it's a war. We have to continue standing. And it is our prayer and hope that we don't lose hope.
That's Zimbabwe physician Dr. Enoch Maida speaking at a ceremony honoring healthcare workers who have died while treating COVID-19 patients. Details coming up. Also, the French army said that it has killed the leader of the Islamic State in the Greater Sahara. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The mandate for the UN political mission in Libya expired late yesterday as Russia deadlocked the Security Council over a one-year renewal, threatening international unity ahead of a presidential election on December 24th. Russia did not approve the language in a resolution drafted by Britain on the withdrawal of foreign troops and mercenaries from Libya. It insisted that any withdrawal should avoid jeopardizing the country's balance of power. The Security Council voted yesterday to extend the mission's mandate until the end of the month in order to resolve contested issues. Jason Pack, president of Libya Analysis and author of Libya and the Global Enduring Disorder, discussed the Russian position with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Well, this is the Russians fulfilling their objective of promoting disorder. They fundamentally already agreed to a withdrawal. They've also always agreed for the UN to have its regular role. This would be the 10th year that UNSMIL has been extended for another year. They are just using their veto power at the UN to block business as usual, knowing that while Libya is in such a critical phase trying to sort out its elections, that any uncertainty at the international level cascades downward and makes uncertainty in Libya more likely.
So how do you explain Russia's denial of any official link to the Russian mercenaries in Libya while objecting to a UN draft calling for withdrawal of foreign troops and mercenaries from Libya?
Well, this is very standard Russian behavior. Putin, on the one hand, says Wagner is a private company. We have nothing to do with them, both about Ukraine, Syria, and Libya. But then what do you know? The Wagner troops, when they need a plane or a helicopter, they get a Russian military one just given to them. And then sometimes he says, oh, yeah, we can get them out of the country when he wants to sign a deal and be seen as making progress happen. But then as soon as it benefits him to use those troops to promote disorder, he says they're not connected to the Russian state. So just another example of promoting disorder.
The mandate for the UN mission expired on Wednesday, and the Security Council voted yesterday to extend the mission mandate till the end of the month in order to resolve issues by then. What does that mean?
Like the Libya issue is going to be resolved in 25 days. This is an extent to just create more uncertainty. And frequently this happens in organizations like the U.S. Congress, where one party blockades the other from passing the budget. But then they're like, oh, but we'll pass a continuing resolution for a few days to like sort it out. So this is like a continuing resolution, but it just creates more uncertainty and gives the Russians more leverage to negotiate. Oh, we won't allow UNSMIL to continue unless our conditions are met, potentially about the replacement of Jan Kubish by another UN special envoy who benefits Russian interests or serves Russian interests. Again, all of these Russian moves showcase that they don't wish to have an alternative order in Libya. They merely seek to produce and promote a global enduring disorder.
That was Jason Pack, president of Libya Analysis and author of Libya and the Global Enduring Disorder, speaking with my colleague Mohammed El-Shenawi. The French army said it has killed the leader of the Islamic State in the Greater Sahara in a major blow to a group that has carried out hundreds of deadly attacks on civilians and armed forces. A reward of up to $5 million had been offered for information about Adnan Abu Walid al-Sahrawi. French Defense Minister Florence Parly told RFI Radio He was targeted because he was the uncontested authoritarian leader of ISGS. Parley described the effort to go after al-Sahrawi.
Comme l'a confirmé le président de la République, le terroriste Adnan Abu Walid al-Sahrawi, chef du groupe terroriste de l'ISGS.
Parley, French Defense Minister. As the President of the Republic confirmed, the terrorist Adnan Abu Walid al-Sahrawi, leader of EIGS, Etat Islamique dans le Grand Sahara, terrorist group, died from wounds caused by a strike from the Barkhane force in August 2021. Thanks to long-term intelligence work and thanks to several operations catching fighters close to Adnan Abu Walid al-Sahrawi, the Barkhane force has managed to identify several places of interest where he was likely to hide. Mid-August, we decided to launch an operation targeting these places. It is at this frame that aerial strikes took place and one of them reached its target. Capping weeks of rumors that he had died, the French army said al-Sahrawi was killed in an airstrike in mid-August while he was riding on a motorbike in the north of the country. ISGS has rendered large areas of West Africa's arid Sahel region ungovernable. France vowed to continue hunting down jihadist leaders to restore stability in the Sahel. There are growing calls in South Africa's hardest hit on the continent by COVID-19 for the government to issue so-called vaccine passports to those who have been immunized against the virus. The introduction of such documentation would, in effect, force people who do not want to be vaccinated to indeed receive the jab, because not having the necessary stamp in a passport would exclude them from travel, for example. Darren Taylor has more.
Some South Africans are outraged that their government is even considering the option of vaccine passports. A minority of these people are so-called anti-vaxxers who question the effectiveness of vaccines. But most are concerned that forcing individuals who, for whatever reasons, don't want the jab to get it is anti-democratic. Human rights lawyer Anne Kampfer says compulsory vaccinations are entirely feasible in the context of a major pandemic.
From a public health perspective, a compulsory vaccination would be beneficial. However, we need to ask ourselves the question that if forcing an individual to receive the vaccination will interfere with any of the rights that the individual may have.
She says there are several legal parameters to be complied with before a government's able to make immunizations mandatory and to issue documents such as vaccine passports.
For instance, is the vaccination necessary? It must be in accordance with the law and it must be in line with a legitimate aim. Therefore, in this instance, it is quite a concern that there may be interference with human rights, but there is also the possibility that the limitation of a human right is justifiable on certain grounds here.
Kampfer says the state won't have a problem proving in court that compulsory vaccinations are necessary to protect all citizens. South African universities are also considering only allowing students and staff on campus if they can prove they've been vaccinated. Higher Health is a group that unites medical sciences faculties across the country. Its representative, Ramnik Aluwalia, says before any drastic steps are taken at tertiary institutions, universities are trying a softer, more diplomatic approach.
What we're trying to do right now in speaking to every young person is to convince them that vaccine will save South Africa. Vaccines will be such an important tool because South Africa is a youth country. If we can vaccinate young people in South Africa in this stage, this can define the trajectory of this pandemic.
One of the country's top COVID-19 researchers, Professor Tulio D'Oliveira, says he doesn't understand the resistance to compulsory vaccinations.
The idea of vaccine passports, it's something that it is used for the past 30 years or 40 years. For example, the yellow fever, you cannot go to many countries in the world, including you cannot enter in South Africa if you come from South America or Southeast Asia if you don't have the yellow fever vaccine passport.
He points out that South African schools demand to see children's vaccine records showing they've received immunization against early childhood diseases before enrolling the youngsters. D'Oliveira says anti-vaxxers tolerate these other mandatory vaccinations, yet are vehemently opposed to compulsory COVID-19 shots, despite the harm the pandemic's causing.
The effect of this virus is catastrophic. It's catastrophic for the health. Hundreds of thousands of people die. It's catastrophic for the economy. It's catastrophic for the education. A lot of children are getting much weaker education. And it's also catastrophic for mental health.
The scientist says he's particularly baffled by the argument that mandatory vaccinations limit freedom.
One of the things that this vaccine will bring to us, the COVID vaccine, it is a lot of freedom to go back to normal life. I really hope that we can decrease this controversy because we really, really need to go back to normal life.
Government sources say President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration is at this stage leaning strongly towards making COVID-19 immunizations compulsory. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Yesterday, the UN Security Council adopted a statement encouraging Ethiopia, Egypt, and Sudan to resume negotiations under the auspices of the African Union to swiftly conclude a binding deal on the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, GERD. GERD, which is said to be Africa's largest hydroelectric project when completed, has sparked an almost decade-long diplomatic standoff between Ethiopia and downstream nation Egypt and Sudan. Egypt depends on the Nile for about 97% of its irrigation and drinking water and sees the dam as an existential threat. Egypt and Sudan have been pressing Ethiopia to sign a binding agreement on filling and operating the dam ever since work started on the project in 2011. Sudan backs the latest statement by the UN on resumption of the AU-led meetings, and Egypt's foreign ministry welcomed the Security Council statement as an important impetus for successful talks. A report by Human Rights Watch says soldiers from Eritrea and militias from Tigray have raped, detained, and killed Eritrean refugees camped in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Prior to the Tigray conflict, Ethiopia hosted around 150,000 Eritrean refugees fleeing poverty and an authoritarian government. According to a Reuters report, the refugees in the Tigray region are distrusted by Tigray militias because they are the same nationality as occupying Eritrean soldiers. On the other hand, Eritrean soldiers do not like them because the Eritrean refugees' loyalty is suspect after they left their homeland. Horn of Africa Director at Human Rights Watch, Letita Bader, says the abuses against Eritrean refugees in Tigray are clear war crimes. The Eritrean government insists it has not committed atrocities and says its forces have not targeted civilians. Spokesperson for the TPLF, Getachew Reda, told Reuters he cannot rule out vigilante groups acting in the heat of the moment. Somalia's President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo says he has suspended the powers of Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble. The president accused the Prime Minister of not having a working relationship with him and said he made rash decisions. The two men recently disagreed over the case of a missing intelligence officer. The National Intelligence Agency says Al-Shabaab militants killed the officer after she went missing in June. The militant group has denied the accusation. Roble assigned a military court to investigate the case and appointed a new director for the intelligence agency, only for the president to reject the moves. The prime minister has not immediately responded to the president's announcement. A source close to him told VOA Somali Service that Roble will share his views with the Somali people soon. With Zimbabwe students back in class, COVID-19 cases are spiking in boarding schools, a development that teachers' unions say could have been avoided and might worsen if not arrested quickly. Adigando gives us more on the story.
COVID cases in the country over the past 2 days experienced an almost 300% spike that's largely been linked to boarding schools, with 266 new cases reported yesterday. Teachers' unions say the figure could be much higher if schools had enough testing kits. They cite failure to test teachers, students, and ancillary staff before putting them back in schools as the chief cause of the spike. The government has been criticized by teachers and others for reopening schools prematurely without adequate preparation, which could set the country back and unleash a health crisis of runaway infections just as the crisis appeared to be easing. Despite government's assurances, the unions insist there is virtually no COVID equipment in schools and say classes are bloated, hostels congested, and there's not enough water to provide proper sanitation. Observers say boarding schools are most affected, reflecting the magnitude of the challenges. The Progressive Teachers Union says Mberengo alone has 125 cases. Sifiso Ndlovu, president of Zimbabwe Teachers Association, ZIMTA, says other schools are reporting similar outbreaks and that the numbers could be higher.
We are experiencing a surge in some situations, and that surge was obviously going to come into the open as soon as we get a number of our people congregated. And hitherto, we're not being tested or screened in their homes. What we must now take care of is that it does not break out to be a pandemic in those environments, so that we can have it controlled through, one, isolation, through good health practices, through vaccination. And that means we should now encourage the younger generation, the teenagers who are in our secondary schools, to be vaccinated.
The union say all boarding schools must be put under a testing regime with physical visits by government leaders and health ministry officials to supervise and monitor the setup of quarantine centers within schools. Schools should be provided with psychosocial support, they say. Observers also say failure by the government will be a dereliction of duty, which may force schools to be closed yet again. They say no excuse is acceptable for a pandemic that has been around so long. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Healthcare workers in Zimbabwe took time yesterday to pay tribute to colleagues who succumbed to COVID-19 while fighting with shortages of medicine, equipment, and protective personal gear in hospitals. Reporter Kuzaza Nwashi has the details.
The singing is from a vigil ceremony in Harare, where healthcare workers paid tribute to their departed colleagues. Dr. Bismarck Matereke says the gaps left by their deaths is evident.
We walk the corridors in the hospitals and you are surprised that you can't see some of the faces anymore. We sat down to come up with this event to really try and show the nation that outside, when they see doctors, but we are also human beings, and we also suffer from all these emotions. We have colleagues who are suffering mentally and psychologically.
Dr. Enoch Maida addressed the healthcare workers present and hundreds more joining online.
We have lost a number of members, colleagues, even in the various medical domains. But at times, you just take the comfort that it's a war. We have to continue standing. And it is our prayer and hope that we don't lose hope, but we continue to give our all in the hope that once upon a time, as we have seen in times past, this pandemic and all the other illnesses that we continue to fight will come to pass.
Dr. Shingai Nyaguse spoke on the sidelines of the event. She says the pandemic robbed the medical fraternity of a wealth of skill and knowledge.
We lost some of the most experienced colleagues people who were instrumental in setting up programs in our medical school, people who were instrumental in raising the next generation of doctors involved in training. It's an irreplaceable loss that we've suffered, and we would really need to actively fill this gap that our colleagues have left.
Nyakusa says infrastructure in health institutions has significantly improved from the beginning of the pandemic, which is encouraging. For VOA, this is Kudze Zinawashe from Harare.
The Nigerian Air Force says it may have killed and injured civilians while pursuing Islamist insurgents in the northeast state of Yobe. Residents told the French news agency AFP that 10 people were killed and at least 19 injured during airstrikes. The Nigerian Air Force did not confirm or deny the alleged death toll. Air Force spokesperson Edward Gubquet, in a statement, said a board of inquiry has been set up to thoroughly investigate the circumstances of the incident. A new sound from the streets of Nairobi youth is dominating Kenya's urban music scene. Music Time in Africa host Heather Maxwell shares more on the genre and its most popular stars with her latest top three.
It's the wild, wild Winnie's
Genge Tone. It's Kenya's hottest new music of the youth. It's full of sherehe and shang. Don't know what that means? Don't worry about it. I'll pop in later to explain all that while we watch my favorite top three Genge Tone hits. You ready? Starting out with number three is Kalale. Now, this is by Willis Bazu Raburu, and it features Reckless, Breeder LW, Medja, and Saru. It premiered in August of 2020 and has well over 7 million YouTube views. One thing that young Kenyans love about Genge Tone is the sherehe vibe. Sherehe is a Kiswahili word for relax, party, have a good time. Okay, number two is Shamra Shamra by a trio called Mbuzi Gang. Now, this one was released in December of 2020, and it has over 6.5 million views. It also features Medja, who is, by the way, the godfather of Genge Tone music. He's in almost every Genge Tone music video or song since the genre emerged in 2018. He's in the next clip, too. Another aspect of sherehe is appreciating women. That's a big theme in Genge Tone. It's often explicit, but not always, like with these top three. And my number one top Genge Tone hit is Chini Chini. It's by five-member crew based out of Oslo, Norway, called Matata. It also features Medja. Now, this clip was released just in August 2021, and it has nearly 2 million views already. Now, the sherehe vibe is super strong in this clip, but so is shang. And shang is Kenyan slang. It combines English, Kiswahili, and other Kenyan languages. Young Kenyans love shang. First of all, because it's a creative use of the language, so it's fun to speak. But also, it's coded. So say I'm a kid, and I'm sitting in the living room with my mom. We're listening to a Genge Tone song, and she does not understand what people are saying in the song. But I do, because only my generation understands it. All right, so that's my top three Genge Tone hits from Kenya. I'm Heather Maxwell. See you next time.
Fika club atelier mchele wanazo anapika githeri na gas
That was Music Time in Africa host Heather Maxwell. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Ihayes Wuhid in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abbaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.